Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
When I was a little kid, my dad was a cop. You see, my dad was a cop in the 80s in Sydney, which is generally regarded as the wild west of law enforcement. A terrifying time to be a cop or a criminal or just to be in Sydney full stop. And I, one day, stumbled upon his case files and they absolutely ruined me. So years later, I approached Dad and we went through his old case files together and it became a book, Loose Units. It's in stores right now, actually. And now we're doing a podcast about it. Loose Units, the podcast, is a weekly true crime podcast where I sit across from my dad, an ex-cop from the 80s, and we dive deep into the seedy underbelly of Sydney's policing. So we're doing this podcast down here in Collingwood every week at Castaway Studios together, and we hope you enjoy it. Time for another episode of Loose Units, the podcast. And just quickly, I wanted to give a bit of a shout out to Derek. We've been recording in a dictaphone in the same room that I wrote the book, Loose Units, and there was a certain rustic charm to that, but we got a message from Derek over at Castaway Studios in Collingwood, and he's like, hey, so I have Michelle Laurie down to record her podcast occasionally. Michelle Laurie's amazing Australian true crime podcast. And would you like to come in and record some of Loose Units here? So Dad's flown to Melbourne for that very purpose and currently sitting across from me frantically taking notes. Dad, I can't read that upside down. What have you just written?
Look, I thought we could do, on this episode, just chat about detectives.
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay, so for those of you who've read the book and for those of you who've been listening to the podcast already, and thank you so much for listening to the podcast, by the way, detectives come across much like the Goombas in the Mario Brothers movies, like these kind of lumbering, corrupt. Okay, first questions first. Detectives can't all have been bad, can they?
No, certainly not.
Because you've literally never, and this is not a criticism, but you've never told me a story where detectives were the good guys, ever. And that could be partly because you weren't a detective, but like, is that an unfair appraisal, would you say?
Look, I think I've mentioned to you before that basically in the New South Wales police force, as it was then, is that you've got sort of three specific groups within the police force. In the middle, you've got general duties, you know, which is your uniform police that just make up the bulk of the police force.
Sure.
And if we were looking at a blackboard and I said to you that we have general duties police in the middle, then to the right of that would be detectives, and then to the left of that would be highway patrol, traffic. And all, in fairness, are really, really important roles. You know, I was walking through King's Cross with my lovely wife, Christine, funnily enough, your mum, yesterday.
Sure.
And we were chatting. We saw a guy walking around booking cars. And Christine said, oh, you know, that's a bit of a, you know, a bit of a rough sort of, you know. But then I thought, you know, if we didn't have those people, people would just come in and park forever. So that's, I guess, a plus. But and as an aside, and you know that I'm sort of, I won't say I'm the master of the aside, but the whole point of traffic police was originally to give jobs to return servicemen after World War II.
Was it?
Did you know that?
No,
I didn't. Used to call them brown bombers.
Why?
No idea.
Okay. See, the trick with doling out trivia like that is to know where it goes.
Good point.
Because brown bomber sounds rude, is what I'm saying.
Oh, I see. You're thinking like a bit of a turd sort of
metaphor. Poo. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Anyway, How do we get onto that?
I was asking you about detectives. They can't all have been bad.
So look, when I joined the New South Wales Police Force, I'll never forget, we were at the academy and an ex or serving member, but he'd gone up through the ranks, but he'd been in the homicide squad.
Mm.
And the homicide squad, I don't know whether it's the same in all police forces, but that would have to be the absolute pinnacle of policing.
Sure.
If you really, really want to go and get yourself involved in some absolutely amazing stuff.
Homicide, are these homicide detectives?
Detectives.
Or right, so the different wings of detectives, I'm assuming there's Vice?
I don't know whether they have Vice anymore, but they used to have what was called the 21 Division.
Sure.
Which were, and they were sort of notoriously known, well, there was a group within that called Beck's Raiders, where they used to go out and, you know, basically do all the heavy shit.
Right.
You know, they were like the riot squad, tactical response group, everything rolled into one. And, you know, they wore suits and they were armed and, you know, they may have had shotguns in the back of the car. And, they were tough, heavy guys. And you know, you've got consorting, which no longer exists.
Yep.
Consorting means if you're a bikie, for example, and you go to jail, when you come out, one of the conditions of your bail may be that you're not allowed to consort or hang out with bikies. So you had this amazing squad called the Consorting Squad. And by their nature, they used to hang out with crims. And they'd hang out where crims were. So they'd hang out in sleazy bars in the Cross, and they'd sort of, you know, their whole job, and they used to get what were called bookings. So if you and I were bikies, and we met up with each other for a drink, that was regarded as consorting with known criminals, and that you'd get what was called a booking. And if you had so many bookings, they could arrest you.
Right.
Then you had the armed hold-up squad, pretty self-explanatory, because armed hold-ups back in the day, to give you an example, back in the 1970s, when you'd be driving along, obviously I wasn't driving, I was a passenger in my mum and dad's car, but very observant from an early age, very visual person, you'd see headlines from newspapers and they'd be on billboards that sort of in between wire, and they were leaning up against telegraph poles in your suburbs, and they'd have a like a headline, and the headline would read armed hold up. How's that? I mean, in terms of, they were very violent, very bad, because banks in those days, everything was cash, no credit cards, and crims would go in with sawn off shotguns. So what the crims would do, they'd go to Kmart or the equivalent of Target, any of the big department stores.
Yeah.
And I've said this to you before, and I think it's in the book, where you'd go up to Warriewood to Target and you'd buy a shotgun with all the cartridges.
From a department store.
From a department store.
Yeah.
Same as in America. And, I mean, that's what it was like in the 70s and 80s.
Right.
And then you'd take the gun home, you'd go out into your garage, you'd put it in a vise, you'd get a shitty hacksaw, and you would saw off the barrels, and you'd cut down the stock, which is the bit that you hold into your arm, and you'd sort of hand carve the beautiful wooden section so that in the shape of it, like a kind of a handle, and then you would be able to shove it down your pants, or have it in a coat, and you'd simply hop into a stolen car with a few mates, you'd rock up to the local bank, and back in those days, you could jump the counter. So all the...
Is that because people were more athletically inclined, or because the counter was shorter, or because there weren't there weren't bars across?
No bars.
Oh, okay.
And you'd have generally women working behind the counters,
right.
And you'd sometimes give them a note that would say words to the effect, this is a stick-up, hand over all your money. I mean, it sounds as though it's... It sounds sort of 19th century America, Midwest.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's exactly the same. And it was sort of, since Sydney was frontierland, Sydney, Melbourne, there were notorious armed robbers. I'm getting a bit off track. So that was the armed hold-up squad, was created to investigate solely guys, mainly guys doing armed robberies, stick-ups.
Yep, okay.
And the money that was involved was staggering.
Just quickly, I'm going to encourage that particular tangent of yours. Did you ever deal with armed holdups in a way that would be intriguing for listeners? Did you ever, I mean, in the book, there's a story where you and someone else rock up at
me and mum.
We'll do that. We can't. I mean, you're gonna have to read the book to find out about that one.
Yeah.
But how many times did you get involved in armed stick-ups?
Well, here's the thing. Back in the day, we would get on average. Look, I was involved in a really, really, really exciting, incredibly notorious armed robbery. It was actually an armed robbery on an armored van.
Right.
And I was working with a police officer that shall again remain nameless.
Same one or a different one?
No, he was, what can I say? I'm not going to describe him in great detail because it'll give it away, but okay. he was lazy.
Yeah.
And he was a bore.
Okay.
He was everything I wasn't, but he was a senior man. And it looked as though he needed to have methamphetamines physically inserted into his rectal cavity to get him to even move. He was just fucked. But, you know, that was the problem in those days, working with people that just didn't give a shit. And there was this major, major armed hold up on an armored van, and one of the guys was shot, one of the armor guard guys.
Yep.
And this was a gang of between 3 and 5 guys, and they were wearing, it was so well organized, and they had an array of disguises, and they were really, really good operators. So they imagine this. You can imagine the surveillance that these guys have put in to prepare themselves.
Yeah.
Like in the movies,
mm.
The work that goes into it, it would probably be a minimum of between, say, 3 and 12 months. Serious, minute surveillance, learning every single thing they can to the second. Now, these guys are heavily armed. And the armor guard, if you have a look now, maybe it's a little bit different now, but back in those days, the armor guard guys were generally, you know, borderline retirees, overweight. You know, if they took more than 2 steps, they'd have a coronary.
It's the Groundhog Day situation. It's just a stooped old man, basically.
You know, it's right. Just and I used to think, and there was no high tech surveillance.
Mm.
You know, we didn't have there generally wouldn't be a helicopter in the air in the early 80s,
mm-hmm.
And they organised this robbery in DY, and I'll never forget. We just started on the afternoon. It was a Friday arvo, and it came across as an armed robbery of an armored van.
Mm.
One of the guys had been shot. I'm not sure whether he died. Now, the thing is, everyone starts heading towards the crime scene.
What do you mean everyone? You mean the members of the public, or are you just talking about
cops? Police. So if you can imagine, we were at North Sydney, and I was really excited. Yeah. And
hang on, you're in North Sydney. Yeah. You get a call about an armored van
in
DY,
which is a good 15 kilometers away. That's irrelevant because it's a major, major crime.
Sure.
Shots fired.
Yep.
It's on.
But surely by the time shots have been fired, they're gone, right?
Well, the thing is, what happens is, and I'll just sort of paint a bit of a picture because this is what happened in this particular case.
But
then you begin to realize that this is fairly common. They use stolen cars. They use pretty fast cars. Mm-hmm. So back in the day, they may have used maybe a 5-litre Falcon, a Commodore, and then later on they would have been using, in Ram raids, they use Subarus, you know, the super fast cars.
Yeah.
And generally that can outgun the police. So what these guys do, they commit the crime and they drive somewhere. Generally speaking, it'll be an underground car park where they've got the second car waiting with a completely different and new and amazing set of full disguises. We're talking wigs, clothing, moustaches.
Do they have a hair and makeup person on side?
On standby.
Or? Okay.
You know, some lady sitting there shitting her pants.
Sure, full, yeah, great.
And so by the time the police start coming in, the chances are they're possibly in their third different car and maybe wearing their third
moustache of the day,
wigs flying,
wigs.
You know, they're trying to apply lipstick.
Yeah.
In a high speed situation,
that's such a bastard.
So they
end
up getting lipstick all over their face.
Yeah.
And it bleeds through with their facial hair.
Yeah. You have to bring someone from Revlon with you to the crime scene to kind of like trace the.
Paul, I've always known that you were an ideas person, but on this occasion,
okay,
no,
all right.
So, but we were hot-footing it. So what I always used to look out for when going into a scene was looking for people leaving, because that's obviously they're heading away. But we didn't catch them. But many, many, many years later, maybe 20 years later, they caught them. Isn't that amazing? Because I read about it and I just thought, wow, that's a long time to get away with something like that.
So when you got to the crime scene,
yep.
Can you describe the arrival? Were you, what, the 10th person on site?
Like probably the 30th car to get there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's a shit fight.
Where was it?
In DY.
Where exactly?
On Pittwater Road opposite the library.
I know that. Yeah, okay.
There's a big Indian sort of bazaar there now. And this poor guy had been blasted with a shotgun, with a sawn-off shotgun.
Yeah.
So with a sawn-off shotgun, they're really, really dangerous. So if you're up close when they shoot you, you know, the object of a shotgun is that they don't miss. The further you are away from a shotgun, the better you're going to be in that the spread will... And you'll get less pellets inside you.
Yeah.
But if you're up nice and close, it'll blow your head off.
And what had happened to this guy?
Well, he was shot, and I'm not sure if he died.
Where was he shot?
In the stomach.
Oh God.
Yeah, pretty bad.
So you got there, surrounded by cops. They'd gotten away.
They'd gone.
How much had they gotten? Out of curiosity.
They never ever disclosed that.
How would you get? We guess.
I would say in the hundreds of thousands.
So you plan a heist. I'm just trying to figure out the time to like the cost benefit analysis of planning a heist, for lack of a better term, for like 12 months, right?
Mm.
Then you pull it. And then you can't presumably just go back to work wherever you have to hide, right? Like, what do you do after that?
Look, as it turned out, these guys were all professional businessmen.
Get out.
How's that? I think it was their first offence and their last.
When you say businessmen,
owners of. Owners of well-known businesses.
Why pull a job like that, though?
Adrenaline, money, thrill, challenge.
Because there was a story a couple of years back. Some guys base jumped off the bar at the top of the casino in Melbourne, I think. And there was some rumors that it was actually like viral marketing for the bar. So rather than like, oh my God, two people have jumped off the building and look, you know what I mean? Basically what they'd done is apparently they'd potentially hired these people to do it so that it would draw attention to the bar.
Wow, fascinating.
Yeah, because it's a rooftop bar and you're like, people jumped off here last week. Glug, glug, glug.
Amazing,
right?
Amazing.
So, okay. I wanted to kind of delve into that a little bit because I don't think... Do you think those kind of crimes happen less nowadays?
I think definitely.
Okay.
Yep.
So
without a doubt. The crime now is, it's a different world.
Right.
Different world. But armed hold-ups. You know, banks, you go to a credit union or any bank, you know, you can't put your hand. They've got these shutters, the covers that come up really quickly.
Yeah.
But not only that, have you ever gone into a bank and asked for, say, maybe $5,000?
No.
Not like a major bank, but I'm with a credit union on the Northern Beaches still, and I went in a few weeks ago to get a decent sum, and it took about 5 minutes for the safe to open.
Right.
So it's all, you know?
Yeah.
It's all designed to slow everything down. And of course, with credit cards now, there's far less cash being kept on premises.
Well, yeah, because I literally wave my phone over the pay pass.
I saw you do it.
Like
amazing.
Like a terrible capitalist magician, you know? Anyway, oh shit, that was quite the tangent. Detectives.
Mm.
We were talking about detectives. Do you remember where we were up to?
Yeah, we hadn't even started, really.
Oh, Jesus. All right.
I wanted to talk about detectives because I, from early on in my career in the police force... Okay, so back to the academy. This ex-homicide detective came in. He was a very sort of distinguished-looking, you know, gentleman. And what he did was he read a page from a statement that he hadn't seen,
sure,
that our instructor gave him. He read it once, and then he recited fairly well word perfect the entire statement.
It's called
one read.
An eidetic memory, okay.
And what happened was I'll never forget this, he told us this amazing story that he was once in court, in the Supreme Court, in a major murder investigation. His statement was so long that he had a friend up the back of the court that would nod every time it was his turn. That was a signal for him to turn the page in his mind.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra.
and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
How good's that?
So that's the sort of...
Okay. I mean, detectives that go into the homicide squad
are
amazing people. They're smart. They're clever, they're intuitive, they're fastidious when it comes to details. They leave no stone unturned.
Okay.
Because, you know, seemingly in the most banal of investigations, where in the most banal detail, sometimes you can find something that is extraordinary. And, you know, it's based on many, many things. So I thought to myself, wow. And that was kind of the holy grail.
Yeah.
Plus, as you know, I'd had a relative that was in charge of the fraud squad. Might I say that I had zero interest in fraud, which is weird because now I look at it and think, wow, that's really exciting because fraud is a really big thing internationally,
maybe,
and cybercrime, and it's exciting. But I thought fraud basically meant sort of like an accounting detective. Because I wasn't interested in that sort
of
stuff.
Right. It would be remiss of me to point out that I didn't know that. I didn't know I had a relative in the fraud squad.
Yeah. He ran the fraud squad.
What?
He was in charge.
When?
Well, I've got a book at home that he did a dedication for me.
What?
Yeah, he invited... Haven't I told you this
no.
story?
No.
Are you sure?
No.
No, you're not sure?
No, I am sure. But I'm saying that...
Would you like me to tell you a bit about it?
Well, I don't know. Is it? I mean,
he was Detective Chief Superintendent Blip Blip.
Blip Blip. That's a strange name. Where is he from? The New Hampshire Blip Blips.
He was a very successful person.
So, when was this?
Well, when I joined the police force, he called me into the Remington Building, which is in Liverpool Street, where all the squads were.
Yeah.
Each squad was on a different floor, and these were like. It was like basically going to the Vatican to have an audience with the Pope.
Mm.
These squads, as they were known, were you couldn't get into these. I mean, it was all high security, keyed sort of swipe access, which is pretty amazing back then.
Yeah.
And I walked in. I got into I was in uniform.
Mm.
I just joined. I was, you know, skinny and wearing an ill-fitting, oversized police uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And there would have been 50 detectives sitting in this particular, that squad, the New South Wales Fraud Squad.
Yeah.
And he obviously had his own special office with views to die for over Sydney. And he came and shook my hand and everyone was kind of looking at me thinking, who the fuck's this idiot jerk, you know, uniformed baby?
Mm.
And he was very warm and kind and we went into his office. He shut the door.
Yep.
And he sat me down and he... gave me a bit of a rundown on how to behave and what to do. And he said to me, John, he said, a word of advice. He said, if ever you go out in a big way.
What does that mean?
It means if you're going to take a quid, make sure it's worth your while.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
Is that endorsing taking money?
You can take it how you like it.
Okay. This is significant for me because you didn't tell me this at any point during the writing of the book.
Right.
So I need to clear up a few things and we'll do it on air.
Well, the thing is, Paul, firstly, that I've got so many stories in my rattling around in my brain.
I know you do.
An unbelievable
number. I know you do.
And sometimes it takes me to sit opposite you in an interview situation too. And that's why I really love doing it, because you tease things out of me. And I cannot be expected to remember everything, even though I've got this amazing book. And he did a dedication in copperplate writing with the most incredible fountain pen, and I've still got the book.
But what I'm trying to figure out is, because you told me that the family weren't super, super keen on
really pissed off.
So why would they be pissed?
Well, this particular guy came out of the woodwork and was never discussed.
Distant relative?
Yeah, distant, but
all right,
he's a relative.
Do you think he had a hand in helping you get into the academy at
all?
Not
a chance.
How often did you interact with him during your time at on the police?
Never.
Never?
No. And he was just there.
All right.
I mean, you know, was he there behind the scenes? He had serious clout.
Okay.
But, you know, I didn't... If he helped me, I didn't know about it.
I just feel like this is there's just so much beneath the surface of this. This is very intriguing. It's like finding... It's not a plot twist quite, but it's very interesting. Mm. Okay, we'll talk about that another time. So, detectives, I would like to hear a story from you about a time you had a positive interaction with a detective.
I'm really battling to find one.
Oh my gosh.
Seriously.
Because you wanted to be a detective, right?
I'll give you a little look. Most of my encounters with the detectives were not great.
Okay.
Unless they wanted something.
Right.
You know, because they were pretty sneaky, pretty cunning. I mean, on the afternoon shift, and I think I've mentioned this to you, that the only thing you'd get from the detectives was a phone number.
What do you mean?
That's all they'd give you.
For what?
I'm about to tell you.
Okay.
They would come down on the afternoon shift, and because most detectives work office hours.
Right.
And at North Sydney, they were up the street in another building. That's still there. And... you know, they were kind of, it's an us and them thing. And they really believed, I mean, geographically at North Sydney, they were actually higher than we were.
Yes, of course.
Because it was up the road.
Yeah.
And that road goes uphill.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that weird
altitude
thing. And I know it sounds pretty wacky.
No, but, it's very primal. It's, you know, it's sort of, on like a lizard brain level, you've got the higher ground.
Yeah.
You know,
and you had to walk up a hill to go in. And to walk into the detective's office as a uniformed police officer was harrowing.
Right.
Because the detective in charge of the detectives at North Sydney back then was a hard man. He had a nickname, which I'm not going to repeat.
Okay.
Can you on air.
Mime it?
No way.
You want to do some charades?
I'll write it down for you.
And let me read it. Okay, great. Okay.
I'm writing it here.
That's some big handwriting. Here we go. That'd be a good title for a movie. That's great. This is terrible broadcasting, but it's very fun for me.
And does that speak volumes?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's... actually, I will tell you a little story about... I'll tell you something that's, for me, was quite profound.
Okay.
There used to be a notorious person in Sydney that I don't know if he's still alive, but his name is Rick Demalian. I'm not going to say too much about that. Suffice to say that he had a very successful car yard on Parramatta Road.
Okay.
I don't know what the equivalent in all the capital cities in Australia is, but you kind of got like an auto alley, shall we call it?
Sure.
Where you've got all the big car dealers. Now, it was on Parramatta Road, just past Sydney University, and it was on both sides of the road, and he dealt with the best cars in the world.
Yeah.
So we're talking Rollers, Daimlers, Bentleys, Aston Martins, Ferraris, Lamborghinis, McLarens, the absolute best cars you can buy in the world.
Yeah.
And it was called Rick Demalian Car Yard.
Yeah.
Or words to that effect.
Okay.
Why am I mentioning that?
Good question.
Yeah, it is a good question. Because when I went up to the detective's office, now this is a classic, and I don't know whether I'm actually the only police officer who worked in Sydney that actually noticed the things I talk about. I don't know whether all my colleagues in uniform were, quite frankly, fucking oblivious to things that were so obvious to me. I used to go, is this for fucking real?
Or they were heading up when you weren't and asking the same questions, but
No, because it was never discussed. I mean, I'd talk about it. I'd go, what's wrong with this picture? So here's the picture.
Yep.
Monday to Friday, detectives working, office boring, wearing suits, white shirts, ties, austere, not particularly happy.
Mm.
Funnily enough, there was only one woman, one female detective at North Sydney. And I say that because things have obviously changed incredibly.
Yeah.
So I remember going up on a Sunday. Now, here's the rub. There was this particularly annoying uniformed police officer. I never liked the guy, but that's not that relevant. But he was a smarmy fuckwit. And the good thing is I can say that because I'm talking about someone specific, but no one really needs to know who he is or was.
Yep.
And he was promoted from uniform to what was called A-list. Now, A-list was sort of a detective in training prior to going into what was called the Bull Ring, which is sort of a sacred, almost mythological kind of Masonic ritual where you'd sit on a chair and you'd have all these incredibly senior detectives around you and they'd just bombard you with questions about the Crimes Act and what you do in this and that. It was really heavy and there was a lot of... It was hard yakka.
Yeah.
And it was a real achievement to go through the Bull Ring and become a designated detective.
Right.
But in A-list training, you were just kind of up there, you know, bouncing around, kind of just getting a feel for it, you know, pretty naive. And this... I'll never forget this. It was one of those great moments where this particular police officer who'd been working with us for some time, he gets promoted to A-list... Get ready for this, listeners. It's a Sunday morning. He calls down to the station and he asks if one of the uniform guys can come up and wash his car. Oh, yeah. He made the call. So he's an A-list fucker. He calls down to the station where the real workers were.
Yeah.
And he thinks he can ask a uniform guy to come up and wash his car. Well, needless to say, that was sorted fairly quickly. Once the station sergeant found out that this prick had made that call. Can you imagine the audacity?
Yeah.
Anyway, so, but as an aside, we go back to me going up to the detective's office and I remember looking through the array, the mass of desks and chairs, and out the back was a side street. And I'll never forget looking at this group of cars, and we're talking serious motor cars, hence my reference to Rick Damalian.
Yes.
And they're all the prestige cars that you can imagine. And guess what? What are they doing there?
I don't know.
They belong to the detectives. And in my puny little mind, in that microsecond of time, I thought, how the fuck can these guys afford to buy these
Aston
cars that are the equivalent to, let me see, 10 years' wage?
Sure.
So, yeah, that was kind of one of the really glaringly obvious things that I would see from time to time.
Mm.
But you'd only ever get to see these cars on weekends.
Right.
Because they'd come in and those detectives that were working weekends felt that, you know, it was a fairly anonymous back street to park their joyous vehicles. I mean, it is possible that they'd all simultaneously won the Opera House lottery, as it was back then. But I don't think so.
So did you ever pursue this with anyone?
Are you serious?
I mean, in just like privately.
Mate, I would never discuss anything.
Okay.
You can't afford to draw the crabs. And these things were known but never discussed.
Mm.
It's a little bit like, it's kind of like a creepy relative that, and we, by the way, for the record, we don't have any creepy relatives.
Well,
but,
I don't know.
Oh, but anyway, but imagine if there's a relative or a family friend that is just doing something that's not cool, and and then years later that person gets arrested, and everyone goes, "Oh, we all knew that he was a whatever."
I see.
Well, why didn't anyone say anything? Because people don't.
I see.
So
okay.
Anyway,
well, I mean, it's okay. So this is fairly pertinent. You've been talking about people in positions of power. I mean, one of the things I have worried about occasionally were the ramifications of talking about these people. And as listeners will now know, at the end of every episode, we go to the mailbag and we grab a question from a listener. And this week's question is actually really on topic. This is from Kim. Kim asks, have there been any repercussions due to the stories and book and podcast? Your dad is pretty honest in his storytelling. I was wondering if he's pissed off anyone / a few ex-cops because of it.
Kim, can I commend you on that magnificent and pertinent question?
Well, she can't reply, but I'm sure she's nodding like viciously. Okay. Yeah.
Well, Kim, hear me out. Are you ready for this? I have not had one negative call, inquiry, phone call, anything. However,
yeah.
Conversely, I'm not going to say inundated, but I have had some incredible, amazing, absolutely heartwarming phone calls, messages, and I got to hook up face-to-face with two of the most senior current serving police officers in the New South Wales Police Force. I hooked up with them a few weeks ago. I'm not going to say who they are, but I'm going to say they're right at the top of the tree.
Did they enjoy the...
They loved it.
Great.
And the thing that really excited them, because I was fairly... Well, Paul, you and I have been fairly discreet.
Yeah. Yes, names have been changed.
Yeah, and these two particular people that met up with me that are... Oh, look, I'd love to tell you how... You know, look, they're right at the... You know, they're the big end of town.
Sure.
And they both said to me they were just dying to find out who certain people were.
Oh, great.
And it was so exciting. And then what happened over a long, long afternoon tea was they began to tell me stories. And it was so heavy because I was told one story about someone very, very prominent in your first book.
Sure.
And one of the officers told me a story about this particular person that I didn't know that was fucking horrendous.
For readers of the book, which character are we talking about?
It's can't go there.
Okay.
Too heavy.
Okay.
But it's just let me say that it left me shattered.
Would you say that there was a certain degree of... Because I know that there were certain points during the writing process where you said... Should we talk about this? And I was the one who often pushed you. Penguin obviously have a very robust legal department, and they, like, just to be clear, they vetted everything to within an inch of its life. We changed locations, names, not all the time, but a lot of the time. If there was, and there are also people that the book paints in a very positive light that we changed the names of. Like, we weren't just picking and choosing. This was a really careful process. But when you talk to these police officers, did you get the impression that they thought you'd portrayed things and that we'd, you know, talked about things respectfully, or like had we gone too hard on people or too soft?
No, so they actually felt in some cases we were too kind to some of the protagonists.
Yeah.
And by that I mean fellow police officers.
Yeah, because there were a lot of times in the book where there were characters that you were, people that you were partnered with or dealing with, and I tried to get you to tell me things in chronological order. So quite often I would write about them from the perspective of someone who didn't know what they would turn out like, right? So maybe that's why certain characters are talked about positively when in fact they turned out to be trash later on. It's because at the time they seemed decent enough.
Yeah, yeah.
Any of the people that you met up with people that were in the... Have you met up with anybody in that was talked about in the book yet? As in, have you interacted with any of the officers that you interact with in the book, and have you talked to them about how they feel about being portrayed in the book?
No.
Because I'm dying. I'm dying to hear some of those stories.
Well, I think it's fairly cryptic. In fact, some of the... And look, I've got a guy that was in my class at the academy, and he's an academic at a certain university in Australia, and he contacted me, an amazing guy, and he comes from a hard police family.
Mm.
We're talking generational.
Yeah.
And he's an amazing, amazing guy, and I'm really, really fond of him. And he was grateful that someone... I mean, I often think, am I the only person that really... I just have such a vivid recollection.
Mm.
And to me, these are stories, and there are so many of them. Bearing in mind, Paul, we haven't actually scratched the surface.
I know. I know, because I mean, obviously, after general duties, you went to forensics.
Well, I was training to be an observer in the air wing, which we'll save for another story.
But... Actually, I'd like to talk about the air wing stuff, but why don't we save that for next week?
Great.
So, if listeners tune in next week, you'll get to hear about Dad in the air wing, a thing that I didn't even know existed until recently. So, I think that I hope we answered your question more or less. The long story short is that, you know, there haven't been any bad repercussions or good repercussions.
Only good ones.
And there haven't been any, you know, I mean, honestly, we're pretty early into this adventure.
But I guess, Kim, I was interviewed on Channel 10 maybe 2 months ago.
Studio 10. We were both 10, on, yeah.
Yeah, Paul and I, and it was live.
Mm.
And they were hunting. They wanted me to spill my guts on a particular thing. And I just, you know, I don't I don't want to. I don't need to. I value my life. Obviously, there are things I could say here and now. I could say things here and now, and it'd be on the front page of the papers tomorrow, and I'd be fucked.
Yeah.
I'm not silly. I like my family, and there's no point in. I mean, a lot of police out there from all over the world, quite frankly, have got stories that could, you know, make it into Time magazine. But you know, you need to. Let's just keep things. You know.
Let's just go softly, softly for now.
Yep.
Yep. Thank you so much, Kim, for the question. Thank you so much to all of you for listening. We love doing this show. Loose Units is a real joy. So thanks for listening to another episode of Loose Units, the podcast. Don't forget to head across to facebook.com/loose units, where we store all kinds of stuff. We ask questions and we post trailers and we interact with fans. And don't forget to head across to iTunes. The best thing you can do to show your love for this show is to tell your friends about it. Get on social media. Just tell people to listen to Loose Units. Leave us a rating and a review on iTunes if you can. And thank you so much for all the kind words so far. And if you haven't already picked up a copy, grab a copy of Loose Units, the book. We will see you next week for some stories from the Air Wing in another episode of Loose Units. Bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.